Now that we have the facts and timeline straight about Marcia's last months and disappearance, we want to get to know her more. One of the themes of this miniseries is I Remember Marcia. I want this miniseries to be more than a mystery, but also an acknowledgement of who she was and a reminder that she was important. She mattered. One of the things that drew me to researching the case was a lack of information about Marcia. In the news reports and 48 Hours TV show, she was a rather colorless wallflower who was a loner introvert. In hearing colleagues at work talk about her, though, I hear a very different Marcia. She could be fiery, passionate, competitive, and fun. That's one thing I heard from friends over and over, is that they'd go off on trips and they would have so much fun together. I also learned about her more reserved side, the private Marcia, and came to better understand how she became that way. Today we'll hear from friends and family as we follow Marcia's life from childhood through her college years.
I often wondered if there had been a traumatic event in her life that had forced her inside. She was one of those people that if you didn't know her, you might think she didn't like you. You might think that she was mad because of her demeanor. And she cared deeply about people and she loved people. So I think that in many cases, Marcia was misunderstood.
Welcome to Targeted, True Crime Podcast. We tell stories of those who were targeted by abuse and investigate cases of family violence using academic research to interpret the events. As a college professor, I think we need to stop making family violence a secret. It's time to tell our stories, use our experiences to help, heal, and provoke change. Targeted discusses sensitive information about abuse. Listener discretion is advised. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. In the new year, 2021, and may it come quickly because 2020 has not been my favorite year, in 2021, we'll return to the timeline in which we'll look at the investigation after Marcia was reported missing. I think you need to understand more about Marcia first, though, before we dig into the investigation, so you'll be better able to interpret the major theories about what happened to her, and so that we can talk more about coercive control and domestic violence. Marcia was born February 29, 1959, in DeKalb, Illinois, to parents Dorothy and David Rader. There was a large extended family on both sides, especially on her dad's side because he was one of 13 children. Her dad was originally from Tennessee, but had moved to Illinois after he left from military service. He took a job in a factory, reportedly working very hard and saving a lot of money. David met Dorothy in Illinois, and they married. It's kind of funny, but when I spoke with some of the family, they referred to David and Dorothy marrying late in life. But when I checked on Ancestry.com, they were 27 years old when they married, which today doesn't seem all that old. But in 1954, evidently that was old enough to almost be in danger of not marrying at all. Marcia was born about 5 years after they married, and she was their only child. Although she was an only child, the Rader house was always full up in Illinois. David had asked one of his sisters, Medra, to come live with them.
From college, I went to Illinois at David's request. He wanted me to come up there, too, so I did. And I lived with them for a while. And in fact, I was living with them at the time I got married. Yeah, we were very close. He's the one that convinced me to move up there. I had a job waiting for me when I got out of business college in Washington, D.C., working for the Navy Department, and he had been in service, and he said, Medra, I know what goes on, and he didn't want me to go. So he convinced me not to go, so I went to Illinois instead.
I asked Medra to tell me about Marcia when they lived in the same house together.
She was born when I lived with her parents, and when she was about
9 years old. She was in my wedding. I remember her because she was such a sweet little girl. She was always been a little tomboy, and her daddy had her spoiled rotten. She was a good kid, but she had a mind of her own. I lived upstairs in their house. Me and two other girls lived with them in the upstairs, and she would come up the steps and want to stay up there with us. And I said, "You go downstairs." She said, "You're not the boss of me." So she was a little spitfire, but she was a sweet little girl. She'd be playing outside, and she would come flying through the house. "Mama, Mama, Professor's coming, Professor's coming." It was Professor Popsicle, the ice cream man. She was always a mama's girl and a daddy's girl. She loved my children. She cried when we moved away. My daughter was 13 months old, I think, when we moved from there. And Marcia told me she cried all day the day we moved. She was special.
It wasn't just her dad's side, though. Her mom, Dorothy, was from DeKalb, and her family lived near them. Marcia spent a lot of time with her maternal grandparents, and especially with her aunt, Martha. Here is Marcia's cousin, Megan, quickly describing why Marcia and her aunt Martha were so close.
She had an aunt that was her mother's older sister. And from different times when Dorothy, her mother, was sick, the aunt would just come in and just kind of raise her as her own till her mother got over cancer.
I think Dorothy's early cancer, when she was only in her 30s, ended up being a major shaper in Marcia's life and personality. Early on in my research, a friend of Marcia's, whom you heard in the intro, remarked to me that he thought there could have been a trauma early in Marcia's life, but he didn't know what it was. Since he was one of the first people I interviewed, I asked everyone after that if there was a trauma and what it could be. No one could identify anything until I spoke with Marcia's mom's side of the family. They could point to Dorothy's cancer as having a large impact on Marcia. Here is Marcia's cousin, Megan, talking about it.
She suffered from the time Marcia was about 2 or 3 years old, off and on, with cancer. Now, there was no problem because Martha never had any children. Martha married late in life, and so did Dorothy. So if she didn't have any, it didn't matter because she already had that daughter, and she looked a lot like Martha. The blonde hair, and when they went places, they would think they were mother and daughter. But it didn't bother Aunt Dorothy that.
Marcia's mom was so sick that she often had to have her aunt take care of her. That particular cousin was nearly an adult when Marcia was born, but her daughter Stephanie spent a lot of time with Marcia because they were only 5 years apart in age. Here, Stephanie tells me a little bit more about how sick Marcia's mom was.
I don't think I remember Aunt Dorothy not being sick. I mean, I can remember Uncle David actually taking her to Mexico for treatments that they couldn't get in the United States.
Dorothy suffered from a variety of cancers. Ill much of the time, yet surviving. As I mentioned before, while Dorothy received treatments, Marcia might live with her Aunt Martha or sometimes with her maternal grandparents. Since Stephanie was a similar age to Marcia, she would often visit when Marcia was at the grandparents' or her aunt's house, and they spent quite a bit of time together. I'm going to let Stephanie tell you a little bit about it.
I have a lot of memories of that time because when she would be at Aunt Martha's, I would get to go up there as well. And I had so much fun with Marcia. There's so many memories. I have a memory of us playing in the bedroom, and Marcia started jumping on the bed, and she got me to start jumping on the bed. And I was like, "Oh no." Aunt Martha walked in the room, and I was like, "Oh, I'm in so much trouble because you didn't jump on the bed at my house." And I jumped down real quick. Aunt Martha walked over to the bed, crawled up, and started jumping on the bed. So we would have so much fun like that. Aunt Martha was just a big kid. So we were always playing games and laughing. It was just the best time. Marcia contributed to my love of reading. We didn't watch television at Martha's house. I mean, it just wasn't on. We would listen to music and read or play games. a lot of times when I was up there, she was doing summer classes too. She would let me come and sit with her and talk to me about what she was working on. You know, we didn't have computers or anything, but she would say, look, this is what I'm reading about, and this is what we're studying. And I always thought that was so patient to a younger cousin that she was willing to keep me informed even when she was busy. And Marcia taught me that you can spray your hair with your head upside down to get your curlers to work better.
All of this led to Marcia being quite close with her Aunt Martha, who was also married late in life. This time, I might come closer to agreeing with that sentiment since she was 40 years old when she married. Marcia was still a kid when Aunt Martha married. Now, whether or not Dorothy or Martha were actually old when they married is irrelevant, because it's the family oral history that's important here. You see, the family tells the story of Marcia's mom and aunt marrying late, and both had very happy, loving, stable marriages. It provided a sort of mythos or fairy tale that Marcia herself might follow when she didn't end up marrying early in adulthood. Aunt Martha also has cancer, as I understand it, when Marcia was a teenager. Dorothy, Marcia's mom, remained ill, but survived. Marcia's parents moved out of Illinois and returned to Marcia's dad's hometown in Tennessee. Rather than Dorothy's illnesses separating them, this drew Marcia very close to her parents as she was growing up. She began to take on the role of caretaker as a teenager and young adult. When she graduated from high school, Marcia did not immediately go to college. Instead, she lived at home and worked. Her Aunt Medra, her dad's sister, the one who lived with them in Illinois, describes it this way.
Marcia worked a little bit after she got out of high school because she didn't want to go to college right away. So she worked for a while, and then she started to a community college. And then when she went there, I think a couple of years, she transferred to Lee. Well, she was a home person. She didn't want to leave mom and daddy, I think.
Marcia's cousin from the other side of the family and her daughter, Stephanie, talk about it this way.
She went to work. There was from the time she graduated from high school until about, a 5 or 6 year span there that they didn't travel as much because Dorothy, I don't think she was able. And by that time I had kids and we didn't go as much either.
I remember, and now that you said that, she was actually, I believe, taking some community college classes when I would go up there. So I think she was still going to school, but she was working and then went to school full time after they moved to Tennessee. And like Mom said, Aunt Dorothy was pretty sick at that time. In fact, I can remember going up there and we couldn't go in and see Aunt Dorothy. She was either too ill or they were trying to keep her quarantined as much as they could. She was on all different kinds of medications and we couldn't go and see her. So I'm pretty sure that Marcia didn't want to be away from her any period of time at that point.
One of Marcia's best friends, Kim, described it like this.
I knew her parents, how funny her mom was and the relationship that her parents had and how close she had been to them and how she really stayed at home as long as she did take care of them and help take care of her mom. She was very committed to them.
Marcia's friend Cricket, who later ended up being Marcia's maid of honor at her wedding, described it this way.
Oh my God, she loved her mom and dad. I loved her mom and dad. I mean, they were just precious, precious, precious people. Would do anything for her. And I don't mean that in like a, I mean, they were good. She was a hard worker, so she learned how to take care of herself and everything, very independent. Just good people. Whenever we would go over there, when her dad helped her build the house, mom would come at times, do her little thing or sit out on the porch. And they just had a very good, healthy relationship, you know. Spent time together. She would go there to their place. They would be there at her place. Just good people. Good people.
Marcia's parents were a family of faith. Being a part of a Pentecostal tradition, as I understand it, that valued belief and reliance on God, prayer, and strict morality. In speaking with family, it was clear to me that another part of the family oral history is how important it was to trust God regardless of life situations. Dorothy was overt about her faith and her willingness to trust God to work in her life and health. This inspired Marcia's second cousin, Stephanie.
She was an inspiration to me. I had breast cancer when I was 37, and no matter what they told me, I knew if you had enough faith in God and you could persevere, that you could make it, because Aunt Dorothy showed me that. You could get through it time and time again, so I knew I could do it.
This means Marcia learned early on to tackle life problems head on while also leaning on faith. Her parents had always sought treatment for Dorothy's cancer, even going out of the country for medical care not available in the United States. At the same time, they prayed and trusted God. Even though God chose not to heal Dorothy, she still trusted Him to use her life to bring God glory. This was a powerful lesson for a woman who would later be stuck in a marriage with a man who did not seem to value her. These family oral histories of women marrying, quote-unquote, late, yet finding true love, a determined stance to seek out solutions, combined with a faith that God would help them work through challenges, these family mythos infused Marcia's worldview. Marcia's cousin sums it up.
The family religion, and that's not a good word to use, their faith in God played a big influence in their family. Religion played a great deal in her family, and it still does in ours too.
It wasn't until Dorothy's health had stabilized, when Marcia was in her mid-20s, that Marcia left home to attend Lee College full-time, which was about 2 hours away from her family. Although Dorothy would become ill again soon after, Marcia's father retired and took on the full-time care of his wife. Even though Marcia lived on campus in East Wing at Lee College during the week, she went home many weekends to be with her parents. I spoke with Andrea, who was one of Marcia's roommates at the college. She described the setup Marcia had in her parents' home when she visited them. It seems like, even though Marcia lived with her parents until she was 28, she actually had her own space in the house.
I remember the weekend that we were staying with her, we went downstairs in her parents' house, and Marcia was like, well, this is where I live. She had kind of like her own apartment of sorts, off to herself. It was part of their home. And I guess the parents, you know, frequented it as well, but it was like just another little home, a little apartment of sorts.
Andrea remembers how close Marcia was with her parents.
You know, Marcia, she would talk about her parents, and she was always wanted to go home to be with her parents on the weekend. I remember meeting her parents. Both of them were wonderful, but I remember thinking they were both, to me, they appeared to be older, you know. I know she was an only child, and her mother made this wonderful honey wheat bread, and she would send with Marcia each weekend when Marcia would leave, she would send her with homemade food, which was just amazing. But they had a very kind of a quiet relationship, it seemed, but it was a loving relationship. You know, when I met her parents, they were these beautiful, jovial people. But they had that same countenance about them as well, that kind of quiet reservation to who they were.
I encouraged Andrea to describe Marcia and share some memories.
I remember she would make me birthday cakes because I was far from home. She really was all about encouraging people. And I never really saw her being negative with other people. That can be a thing when you have a host of girls on a floor in a dormitory. But she would always stand up for other people. If she felt that someone else was being just, I don't want to use the word bully, but being a negatively perceived or something, she would always take up for the underdog. One semester, I decided I was going to try and save money, and I went off the 7-day meal plan to the 5-day. And so that meant I couldn't go to the cafeteria, on Saturday and Sunday. So during that semester, she would wear this big jacket with huge pockets, and she would bring me food. She would line her pockets with yogurt, and she would take plastic Ziploc plastic baggies and put them under the cereal dispensers. She would bring me sandwiches wrapped up, just whatever, you know. It's funny now, but she did those little things.
While Andrea and Marcia were roommates, they weren't necessarily best friends. Marcia had an incredibly strong friendship with two other women who lived in the dorm, neither of whom I was able to interview for the podcast, so I decided not to include their names. I've heard their friendship described as fun, tempestuous, and mercurial. This may be hyperbole, but it seems like one day they would be three best friends, and the next day Marcia might be yelling or throwing books. Evidently, their friendship continued for well over a decade, following a pattern where they were sometimes best friends and sometimes frenemies. But it had largely ended by the time Marcia married Donnie when she was in her 40s. While I spoke with a number of people who described this triune friendship, none wanted their voice attached to the memory, so you won't hear about it directly from them. I think we all want to be sensitive to the real people who are still alive and dealing with their own trauma from knowing that one of their former best friends is now gone. But for me, it brought an aspect of Marcia to life, which is why I included it for you. While those around Marcia often described her as reserved or stoic, she also had a fiery side that she didn't reveal to everyone. I think she really had to trust someone, such as these two friends, to shake that part of herself loose. It seems to speak to the closeness that those three had together. In many ways, I think they were like sisters. Moving on from the triune friendship, it was while at college that Marcia met Kim Shank and began what would become one of her longest and most stable of friendships. I found the story of how they met quite surprising, and it also kind of shatters the notion that Marcia was a complete introvert. Marcia was a part of a Christian ministry group at Lee College known as Pioneers for Christ. It was a group of students who would travel to various churches to minister. And that means they would teach lessons from the Bible, they would sing about God, and pray with people in the congregation. Marcia was devoted to Pioneers for Christ, and when she wasn't visiting her parents on the weekend, she would be traveling with the group to minister and share the love of Christ. Now that you have the background of how they met, let's hear about it from Kim. I was just worried if I played this clip without introducing it, that it might not make sense.
I met her probably in the mid-80s, probably about 1986, 87. And she was at Lee, and she was in that Pioneers for Christ that they had back then. I don't know if they still have that now. And she came to my church. From what I recall, they would just go in there and sing and preach and like hold a revival for the week or whatever. I think when they went into smaller churches, they basically sometimes would teach them music and do some really cool things with them. But it was funny because the church I went to was a smaller church, but it was a pretty extraordinary group of people. And our music program was phenomenal, even for the day back then. I think they were surprised at what they walked into, because I remember her talking about that.
I was a bit surprised hearing how they became best friends from a randomly meeting at a church Marcia visited for an hour or two with Pioneers for Christ.
But we did. She just kind of took to me, and I don't know. I was probably an older soul in a lot of ways and a lot of kids my age, too. And I think that's one reason we just kind of clicked. We were like 11 years apart, but we just kind of became friends, wrote back and forth and all. And it wasn't the day of email or anything like that. We literally wrote letters. And then I became really good friends with her and her family, at least her mom and dad. We just got really close over the years. I ended up going to Lee for several years. She ended up graduating. I ended up coming back to Ohio. I don't know. We just had known each other since that time.
They became pen pals and wrote letters to each other based on just that one meeting. They became closer friends through the written word, and Kim chose to attend the same college as Marcia, thus cementing their friendship. It was around this time that Marcia pulled away from her extended family. It's a fairly natural thing to happen for a college student, not to see or talk with aunts, uncles, or cousins. But it seemed harsher to some because Marcia was nearly 30 when she stopped communicating with them as much. Kim does not remember a time when Marcia was close with her extended family, at least not in the way that she was when she was young.
She's got a wonderful family, but she was not close to them, and she didn't have the greatest relationship with them. I mean, she really didn't. She did not discuss her family. She was not close to them. There's a reason months went by and they didn't know she was missing either. I mean, they did not know. Marcia isolated Marcia. Marcia lived a very private life. And Marcia had pulled away from a lot of the family.
We're running out of time for today, so we'll discuss Marcia's professional life, her Christian faith, and her marriage to Donnie next time. This will all lead to the important questions we'll be focusing on soon. Did Donnie systematically isolate Marcia from friends and family? Was she the sort of person who could be controlled and isolated? Best friend Kim didn't think so.
Marcia isolated Marcia.
But my research tells me something different. Since New Year's is almost here, I'm going to end with Marcia's final New Year's post from her blog. She was in an excited phase of her life, and she was tight with her writing group, and the financial problems hadn't escalated as they soon would. It's sad that her new year would not be full of the growing opportunity she had hoped it would have. I pray it's different for you, my friends. I pray it's different for us all.
January 1st, 2009. Today, I had a great time. I spent about 4 hours with a group of writers who know no bounds. We call ourselves the Thunder Rock Writers. During this time, we set our goals for the year and left totally excited. I remember just starting out as a wannabe writer and looking for others like me, only to hit a wall. In the past 4 years, I've been blessed with some really helpful writer friends who've helped shepherd me into a cozy little place where I can grow and learn all the while being kicked in the butt when needed. It works for me. Now, it's time to give back. Throughout this year, Thunder Rock Writers will be hosting some pretty cool opportunities for writers. I'm so very happy to be aligned with such talented writers who truly have a heart to help other writers achieve their goals. If you haven't checked us out yet, go to thunderrockwriters.com.
Thanks so much for joining us at Targeted True Crime Podcast. If you're interested in my sources or research, I include a bibliography on my website, www.targetedpodcast.com. If you want to support the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and writing a sentence or two about what you like. If you want to connect on social media, I'll include links in the show notes. If you'd like to reach me via email, you can do that at targetedpodcast@gmail.com. Please stay tuned for promos at the end of the podcast and check them out if they sound interesting. As we end, let me emphasize that if you or someone you know is a survivor of domestic violence, you are not alone. There are resources available to you. I've included some contact information in the show notes and on the website about a few organizations. Leaving an abusive relationship can be one of the most dangerous times for a target, so I strongly encourage you to reach out for support. Getting help may be the hardest thing you'll ever do, but it will be worth it. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. Peace, my friends. Peace.